You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Just a brief introduction on myself. I was a 15th round draft pick by the New York Mets in the 2003 MLB draft. And I was a 6th round pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 2006 MLB draft. I spent 6 seasons pitching professionally, and now I own Mazingo Baseball. And I am very excited to welcome y'all to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Today's guest is Chad Longworth. Chad, welcome to the show.
What's up, man?
Hey, so look, Chad is a fellow single A superstar. So we got to start things off by talking about this. So he went to a high school by the name of J.J. Kelly, which was an absolute powerhouse in single-A baseball back when I was coming through, and I guess throughout its most of its history. Is that about right?
Yeah. We won nine state championships. I think we were runner-up 4 times. So
yeah, I just
13 appearances in the finals throughout the history of the school.
Yeah, it was a pretty impressive run. It's sort of sad that there's no more J.J. Kelly.
I know. It hurts me. It hurts my soul.
So, look, so you were drafted out of J.J. Kelly, and we're going to just kind of start there. So, it's not really all that common to find hitters drafted out of single-A baseball, right? So, you'll find some.
Right.
I assume you came through right around the time on a state level when it comes to single-A baseball. With Jimmy Gobble coming through at John Battle, right?
John Battle, yep.
So, like, we'll find some pitchers. And then, of course, right after you left, I was at Essex and was drafted out of high school there. So, you'll find some pitchers. Just not all that common to see the guys coming out as hitters. So, what made you different, Chad?
I don't know. I was fortunate in – a few ways, I guess. I was a good athlete, for one. I was a all-state basketball player, second leading scorer in the history of J.J. Kelly High School in basketball.
Nice.
You know, like a five-tool player. Like, I get on the internet a lot and yell about raw skills and physical capabilities and all these other things. You know, I guess – I would be what you would call a five-tool player. I could run. I had a good arm. I had power. I had bat-to-ball skills. My defense maybe wasn't great, but I got drafted as an outfielder and never played outfield in high school. I'm just an athletic guy. I would have been the ATH recruit. You know, they recruit the kids that are just athletes. Right. That would have been me. I would say that's probably how it happened. Just because I was just maybe in the single A high school world, as far as baseball goes, the top end athletes don't play baseball. You know, they're more football driven. I didn't play football, but yeah. And then I was blessed with just from the day one, my not to be long winded about my family history, but my grandfather was a Blue Angel.
Oh, nice.
So he was one of the best fighter pilots in the Navy.
Nice.
So my vision and perceptual skills, I think Robert Riggins could probably go deeper into this, just genetically were higher. Like, I just never had a problem hitting the ball in the barrel, ever. Didn't always. Wasn't the best little league player growing up. Wasn't until I was about 14 that I really just exploded and just became – what I would become, you know, at 18 years old. But I just always could hit the ball. I just could always hit it. Like, I never had any problem hitting it. I don't ever remember struggling hitting it.
All right, so look, I had every intention of starting this off in a different way, but you just mentioned two things that I think we sort of have to talk about a little bit. I can forget things with the best of them, so hopefully I don't forget. Yep. But the two things I want to talk about are the vision aspect and then what you just said about your Little League days. I'm going to start with this Little League stuff because I told you before we started that I'm on the local Little League board, and I have face some pushback from people that think that if kids aren't up to par by the time they're 6, 7 years old,
right,
then they need to go back to T-ball and the parents need to work with them and they just don't want to be patient whatsoever. So I want you to sort of reiterate that, about what you just said and kind of talk about your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, so I was basketball. My dad played Division I college basketball. He played at East Carolina, and then so basketball was kind of my main, you quote fingers, my main thing. It was the thing that I played in the driveway the most. It was the thing that he and I talked about the most. Baseball was just kind of something that we did, that I did in the spring because the guy, my buddies did it. My buddies went to school with it, so I wasn't the best player. Matter of fact, on my regular season, now you mentioned J.J. Kelly. J.J. Kelly was a powerhouse because the rec league, little league here in town was powerhouse. Like, it was huge. It was a big deal. Baseball was a big deal here. So everybody played, you know, and at that time, little league was 9 through 12. We didn't split it up 9, 10, and then 11 and 12, kind of like they do now. It was 9 through 12. If you were a 9-year-old, you got in there in the box against 12-year-olds.
Right.
Which, it was a whole other conversation about I could go into stories of me just standing in the back corner of the batter's box praying I wasn't going to get hit by a monster 12-year-old. But, like, at that time, and the Little League rules were you either played two innings or you got one at bat. I think now you have to do both. But then it was either or. So I was the 9-year-old kid on my rec league, Little League team that – played two innings in right field or got one at bat. And so according to these rules, I didn't deserve to like breathe because I wasn't up to par, I guess, with my little league team. And so, yeah, you just never know. You just never know. I think people weigh the world is today way too fast to label kids as good or bad or whatever, you know, just way too fast.
And then you mentioned the age groups with like Little League and all back in the day. Little League has gotten a little bit crazy for me in some of these. They classify things a lot differently now than what I was ever used to.
There's
a lot of wiggle room now. So like you could technically have like, I may be missing this a little bit, but I think like technically the 13-year-olds or 12-year-olds can play like with the seniors now. It's gotten crazy. 11-year-olds can play all the way down in like coach pitch if they wanted to. Like, it's just a little bit weird for me. But anyways, your point still remains. And on the travel ball side, you get these, especially in baseball. Softball is a little bit different, but in baseball, you know, you got 8U, 9U, 10U, 11U, 12U, 13U, right? And people buy into the travel ball mindset a lot more than the little league model, right? And I don't know how you feel about this, but it can be very, very, very frustrating on my end. And especially with the way, and I don't know if you have experience with this, but the way travel ball is done at the 8, 9, 10U levels is just so far removed from what the kids need, in my opinion, with the lead ball, that I just can't get on board with that.
Yeah. So my plan, my grand plan, you know, when I think about my own kids, is they were going to play in the league. I wasn't going to force them into the competitive travel ball, club ball, whatever you call it, world.
Yep.
Happened. And then COVID happened. And my son specifically played T-ball when he was 4. The only time he's ever hit off a tee, by the way.
We're going to get into that. Don't worry. Yeah, we're going to get into that conversation. Yeah.
But we just need to get him in an activity. Socially, just sports is a great social activity.
You
know, it's the only thing that I'm social at in my entire life today. So sports is a great social activity. We just need to get him involved. We get him involved. Come back 2019. He's 5. I tell the guy that's running the league, like, hey, just want Marsh to play up in – his name's Marshall. I just want Marsh to play up in the coach pitch league. He's 5. I've only thrown to him his whole life. We're not going to play T-ball again. The guy says, cool, whatever. And so Like the day of Coach Pitch tryouts, I still hadn't heard from anybody about tryouts. So I sent the lead guy, a message, and I said, "Hey, did you want me to bring Marshall to tryouts?" And he said, "Actually, the board voted, and we're not going to let 5-year-olds play up." I'm like, "Oh man, okay, whatever. Well, we're not playing T-ball again, so I guess we'll see you next year." Next year happened to be COVID, so there was
Right.
no league. So my son goes like basically 2 years and hasn't stepped on a baseball field. So 2021 rolls around, and the local league is still kind of like, are we going to have it? Is there going to be enough? There's some dissension between league and travel and all this other stuff. It's like, I'm going to find a team I'm comfortable with some people I train, and we're just going to jump into the travel ball just so we can play games. Because
Yep.
my dude has never not been, he's not been on the field yet in like,
Right.
in his life in a baseball game. Granted, he's 7, there was no rush, but like, I need to get him some games. And so we jumped into that. It's been okay. My daughter's experience has been great, but my son, we won't get too deep into it, but it's fine. It's fine. It serves what we need it to serve from the long-term developmental model, like you talked about. They don't serve that very well.
Yep.
I serve most of that. You know, I have the
Right.
means and the facility to serve his long-term developmental needs, and then we just use the travel team just to get the games in. So
Yeah,
we have to
so
go to
look.
practice and all these other things, but our central focus in both my kids is the long-term developmental needs of athleticism, strength, coordination, all these perceptual things.
Yep. Hey, so you just mentioned something that I've got to talk about as well.
Yep.
You're talking about the Little League and them like not letting you go play coach pitch or whatever. So
Up. I want him to
and
play up, not even play down.
yeah, I mean, kind of crazy. But so here's the deal. I told you that I'm on our local Little League board, here where I am in Essex County, Virginia. And I have just sort of, and I hope this doesn't come out the wrong way, but I have just sort of pled my case, if you will, on why things should be done the way that I think they should be. So we were doing the machine pitch when my oldest son Nolan was starting into that realm. They were still doing machine pitch, and I hate the machines. So I stated my case, and I mean, I pretty much told him, "Listen, I don't really care if y'all vote my way or not. I'm gonna throw to my kids. If you don't like it, one of y'all can come coach the team. But I'm gonna throw to my kids regardless." But I convinced them that coach pitch was better than machine pitch. We did that. We had a little bit of an issue and some debate coming out of the COVID year because these kids hadn't played in 2 years on whether or not they should be striking out or not. I didn't love the idea of, and I told you this, we have lost a lot of kids, like just are not playing youth sports anymore, and especially baseball. And that's kind of my big thing, right? So I saw that these kids were striking out repetitively with the machine. And just, why would you come back if all you're going to do is come out there 3 or 4 times a game and strike out and walk back to the dugout? I didn't understand why kids would want to come back, right? And we see the numbers going down every year. We didn't have numbers playing kid pitch. They stop at machine pitch. So I said, listen, we're not going to do that. When the kids are struggling like that and they haven't played in 2 years, and hate me if you will, Chad, we're going to maybe disagree for a second, but that's okay. We did a thing where if we swung and missed a certain amount of times, we brought the tee out so that the kids could feel contact and actually get to run the bases, right? And then the parents get excited about it, grandparents get excited, and the kids feel like they have accomplished something. That was the goal behind that.
No, so and I think that I could make the shortest Devin at Driveline is phenomenal. They have a youth baseball certification
Yep.
that's around long-term player development and all these other things, which is excellent. But I could make the shortest youth coaching course ever right now, and it is your sole job is to make sure that they like baseball enough to where they want to play next year. And
Exactly.
so,
I'm with
and
you
so,
100%.
and so if we got to drag the tee out there and let them feel good, I'm good with that. Like if it's for the purpose of like, we're trying to get kids involved in sports and keep them in sports. Yes, that's fine. Now
Hey,
we've
look,
got to be, we've obviously got to build a model in practice where we our skills are getting good enough to where we're getting away from this. Like we don't want to keep this forever, but
right. So,
to serve that one principle, if it serves that one principle, I'm good with it.
all right, good. Glad to get your approval there. Hey, look, but so that was really just for the COVID year. That was kind of the plan, right? We got away from it this past year. We did not use the team much. Now, if the
That's
kids,
good.
if they were kids that just were never going to hit the ball, right? Then yeah, we'd bring it out, but
there
we tried
those.
To get away from it. We tried to make it a little bit more competitive, and I hope this doesn't come out the wrong way again. Like, the adults get wrapped up into youth sports way too much, right?
They sure do. They sure
so,
do.
But the idea there was that we wanted to, like, make, like, we basically kept standings in coach pitch last year, but that wasn't for the adults, right? Like, I do not, me as a coach and as a parent, right? Like, I don't care if the kids actually win or not, right?
Right, right.
But I want them starting to want to win, right? And
compete
to understand.
I wrote a little dissertation about my kids' seasons this year, and I said, you know, wanting to win is important. Competing to win is important. Actually winning, not that important. And matter of fact, losing may be more important because it fuels their obsession to want to try to get better so that they don't lose more. That's what I said to my kids.
100%, I'm with you, like, big time.
You got drafted. I got drafted. You've been around high level players. I've spent time around high level players. There's one thing that high level players all share, and it's the obsession to the craft of becoming better. You know, they're obsessed with it. You know, and a lot of times early on, losing can fuel fun. Fun fuels the curiosity, and the curiosity fuels the obsession. My kids hate losing, and I tell them, you know, if you don't want to lose, then your individual commitment to winning is being the best version of you. So that requires practice time.
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever said it nearly as well as that. I'm not always the best with the words, but but that was well said, very well said. I tell people this, and I sincerely mean this. Everyone gets so wrapped up in winning, right? And you'll see adults
competing is super important.
Their day is ruined if their kid had a bad game or if their kid's team lost. I'm like, seriously, I know, got to get over this, right? But I mean this. I am much more driven by losses than I ever was by wins, 100%, right? I do 100%. Not remember many of the wins. Like, of course, going back to high school and even into college, right? Once you get into pro ball, things are a lot different,
it's
right?
It's a lot different. Yeah.
There's way too many losses to count at that point. Yeah. But when I was 11 years, so my oldest son has been watching like the most recognizable songs. He found it on YouTube. He's been watching it, right? We've been jamming to it, right? And me and my wife have been trying to see who can name the artist the quickest, right? So anyways, there's a song on there that everyone loves, right? And it's We Are the Champions. Well, I can't stand that song. I hate it with a passion. And it goes back to when I was 11 years old. It was the only time playing Little League that a team I was on didn't win our district championship. And the team that won it, I refused to say who it was. I was 11 years old. Just soon as the game was over with, they had a little boom box. And the second the out was made, they started blasting We Are the Champions. So to this day, when I hear that song, that's what my mind goes back to. I hate the thing.
That fueled your obsession with your craft. Like your absolutely. Commitment to your craft. It's like, this feeling stinks. And I think if you look back at all, I mean, you talk about the greatest competitors of all time, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, like these guys, I think all of them had this obsession with losing. It's like Jordan gets beat by the Pistons in the playoffs. You know, Kobe, whatever. I don't know exactly. You know, I watched the Redeem Team. Kobe says, I joined the team because I got tired of seeing you all lose. I think if you look at a lot of these guys' stories, it's like losing is what fueled their obsession. They love to win, certainly, the drive to win, but it was the losing that, like, really sticks in their crawl. It's like, I don't want to feel this. I don't like
this. Absolutely. And that's my biggest problem with today's culture of trying to manipulate all these winning teams, right?
Like, right. There's that. And then, I try to run you're involved in the public board league. I try to do as many things in the private sector as I can. And one of the things we do, we play 3-on-3 basketball on Sunday. It's no refs. There's no refs. There's no coaches. We divide the kids up. And I said, look, I want you to learn to compete with each other. I want you to call your own fouls. Really what you see, though, is you see kids kind of they're emulating the behavior of the adults.
Yep.
And I try to tell them, like, look, umpires don't lose games, okay? Umpire might make a bad call in the moment, but you know, you missed three free throws earlier. You lost by four. You missed three free throws. You missed a wide open layup. You had plenty of opportunities to win the game. Like, take responsibility. Quit passing it off. You know, in the youth world, we pass it off. We blame it. The adults in front of the kids blame it on the umpire. They blame it on the coach. They blame it on this person. You're just passing off opportunity to fuel your kid's obsession to blame it on somebody else.
Oh, man.
That's not how this works.
You have no idea how much this eats me up. So this is kind of funny. Every year we have a coaches meeting for Little League, right? And look, this should not be any big shock. We have a massive problem right now with youth umpires, right? Like, 100%. What we're seeing, like, it is, messed up, right? So anyways, when we go do this coaches meeting, one of the first things that I tell them, and it gets everyone to laugh, right? And it is what it is, because everyone agrees with this at first, right? And that is, listen, I tell them, we're not going to complain to umpires. Like, I do not want any of y'all complaining to umpires. And I mean this respectfully, so I hope this doesn't come out the wrong way. But we know the umpires aren't going to be any good. That's why why they're doing Little League games, right?
Right.
And, of course, when I say that, everyone laughs and says, you got that right, right? And I said, but understand, it's no different than the players involved all stink too, and the coaches involved all suck. And that's when everybody says, oh, you know. But I'm like, look, it's just, I'm telling y'all
it's
the truth.
Okay.
The Yankees ain't calling none of y'all tomorrow. It ain't happening. If you were any good, you wouldn't be here.
Yep.
All of us are in the same boat, players, coaches.
Yep.
Umpires, if I want to take it to another level, the fans, we're all in the same boat. We're not any good, or we wouldn't be here.
We're all amateurs. Yep.
So, but you know, everyone wants to blame the umpires. Anyway, hey, one more thing before we jump ship. The other thing I was going to tell you when it comes to what I did on the Little League side. So this year or this past year, we got away from the tee, like I said. But what we also did was, and I think you would like this, at the T-ball level, so that was our 4 and 5 year old group.
Yep.
We did a coach pitch variation with them. So they all got 5 pitches from a closer distance, right? And most of them were underhand. Granted, I did throw overhand to my youngest son. But everyone else went underhand. We had six teams at the T-ball level.
Yep.
And by the third game of the year, every single team was doing coach pitch, and if they swung and missed 5 times, then the tee came out at the T-ball level. So I thought you might like that. The one thing I do need to do a better job of, and I'll ask your opinion on this. We are all kind of standing up. The adults are standing up to throw to the kids. I think we probably need to go to a knee. What is your thoughts on that visual for the kids from adults throwing, like standing up versus from a knee?
Depends on how big the kid is, honestly. You're probably looking at standing up like a 30-degree descent angle or something wild like that.
It's pretty steep.
Like
it's pretty steep.
Like a 18, 19, 20-degree descent angle from kneeling or seated. Probably kneeling or seated is probably better, but, again, it's all fine. Like, you need to learn how – it's not fast enough to where it would matter. It's not – it's just them learning to self-organize and perceive the ball flight and time the arrival of the ball and, you know, all things they need to do to be a good hitter first. You know, it's why I don't love the tee. You know, keep saying that. I don't love the tee because it takes all of those things out of it. And those are really, like, first principle things. Like, if you can't time the ball, if you can't perceive the ball flight, you can't swing accurately a moving pitch, so you're not going to be a hitter.
All right. So last thing before we jump into what I really wanted to talk about, and that is the vision. You mentioned the vision, and I'll just share one quick funny story. I hope the kid doesn't get offended, but it is what it is. There was a kid. He's a pitcher in college now, so it worked out. But there was a kid several years ago who was – his dad was bringing him to me to hit a little bit. And I don't do a ton with hitters, but I do a little bit just because there's not really anybody out here doing it. But anyways, the kid has horrible vision. I mean, just horrendous eyesight. He needs contacts. He wouldn't wear them. He didn't wear glasses, right? So he just was basically blind trying to hit. And I just pretty much told his dad, I said, listen, you are wasting your time. The boy's never going to hit. You're not going to find many good hitters without good vision. So let's just 100%. go from there. So I'm gonna let you jump in with that and get the take. Give me your thoughts on the vision aspect of hitting, like literally eyesight.
Yeah. So when I did my podcast with Riggins, it was one of those moments where you realize that I haven't done the best job preparing the hitters that I could do. And so I don't know if you follow Robert Riggins, but he's a big, like, perception leads action guy in training perception, you know, eye patches, strobe glasses, just the perceptual challenge of hitting. It's huge. I mean, it's a huge deal, you know, and I think that we talk about, I get yelled at on Twitter almost daily about how major leaguers use the tee and how the tee is an important piece. And my response is always, sure, you know, if your visual perceptual attunement to the task in the game is so good, like major league players, and it doesn't really matter how you start or how you train because you have lots of time to devote to training, then sure, do that. But you know, youth kids, amateur kids, people that work, you don't have a lot of time, and so you need to devote your time, your training time, to what's going to give you the most return on investment. And if you spend 20 minutes, 30 minutes on the tee, that's 20 minutes or 30 minutes you're not perceiving ball flight. You know, if you do that, you extrapolate that over here, that's a ton of time that you are not perceiving and timing ball flight. Like that's the whole challenge, is like how to be on time with the flight of the ball. And I don't want to take any time away from an amateur journey, I guess, perfecting mechanics without the perception and timing of the ball flight, because like that's hitting. That's what hitting is. You don't get the mechanics and then apply it to the ball flight. The ball flight is part of the mechanics.
Check back later for part two as we discuss hitting mechanics, the mental side of hitting, and some of Chad's favorite topics like the tee and bunting. Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the channel so you can get notified when the latest episodes are coming out. Share it with all your friends. Leave us a review. Be sure to check me out on all the social media accounts. It's going to be @Mazingo Baseball. And check out the website, MazingoBaseball.com.